Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Well, go ahead, Mike.
I'll say welcome, everyone, to Informal Paranormal. I'm here with John Rossi. Hey, John.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, that's good. Very good. Yeah, that was a little crosstalk there. Sorry, everybody. But anyway, we've had, I guess, an interesting week of, well, I have at least, validations on two different fronts. But anyway, John, you've got a thing coming up later we'll talk about your you're doing a live broadcast next week, aren't you?
Yeah, live on-location broadcast, and we'll give everyone the information about where it's at and what it's going to be all about. Probably midpoint through our show we'll talk about that.
Well, that'd be great. I think that's going to be really fun for everybody, too, considering they can just get on the web and go look at this museum, more or less, because I can point them to it. So now, if we want to, any other subjects you want to talk about right offhand?
I don't know. I think we ought to just start talking about your the remote viewing. Oh. This week's going to be a little bit different because we're actually going to be talking about two different methods of remote viewing. One's called, if I correct me, Mike, if I'm wrong, front loading.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is called queuing.
That's correct.
Okay.
And this is my first go with this, so forgive me on how inaccurate this is in all likelihood going to be. But the thing of it is, with queuing, you more or less define the location of the target, the time span of the target, and it's mainly word descriptors, right? You know, it just narrows down your search area. It's kind of like doing a Google search, and you actually provide perimeters to look within. So, and you go that route. And then front loading is you're providing pictures or a map or something and actually have an arrow pointing to the object that you're wanting to remote view and ask a pertinent question about it, something along those lines. But we've got two different ones, and I'm going to go ahead and load the first one in.
Well, why don't you the first one actually is a
queue.
Is a queue?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This is the queue. Just a second, and I'll describe what's going on. Let's see here. John, if you want
to... Okay, the first one's a queue, and that's the one where this time I provided Mike with some verbal descriptors, but evidently my understanding wasn't correct, and I wasn't specific enough with the verbal cues. So they're a little bit more general than what's typically used in this style of remote viewing.
Okay, it's loading it. And I will now provide everybody in the chat room with the link. If you're interested and you're listening to an archive show, just go to paranexus.org. Look in, the members area?
Members in Action Forum?
Yeah, the Members in Action Forum. This is the Informal Paranormal Remote Viewing 9/5/2010 show. And you can go look it up anytime you'd like. The pictures are going to be there. And here's the link for everybody in the chat room. And this is the target I came up with. And the actual cues are outdoor event vehicles in competition. Now, what I was getting off of this was it's a parade, and I'm guessing it's kind of like the Tournament of Roses parade or something like that, and if it's actually a float competition, I don't know that that was exactly what it is.
Okay. Well, that's kind of interesting. Let me go ahead and post the actual photograph then. So what were some of the words that you associated with
this actual target?
Uh-huh.
I was getting pattern, plant-like, flowered, yellow, red colors, blue colors, smells. I was getting smells of flowers. It's warm. I'm hearing music and people, and cars and floats were in the what I was picking up.
Okay.
Lots of people.
Lots of people.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on.
Of course, you know, the picture, you can see there's buildings and people lining the streets and the floats going down the street.
Okay, if you refresh your page.
Ha, Demolition Derby. Nice. Well, I don't know about no flowers.
Dude, I've driven in a number of derbies, and I've even won a couple over the years, and I don't think I smell flowers when I'm there. It's more like oil and smoke and burning tires and stuff.
There could be, like, you know, the queen of the derby that gets the flowers, but there are red, yellows, and blues in this.
Right. And there are cars.
And I imagine there's music playing, and there's people, of course. Huh.
Right.
That's cool. Well, that's interesting. All right. Cool. Yep.
All right.
Let's see how good we did on this next one. Since you've already provided the picture of the box, I'm fixing to upload the...
Let's talk about that for a minute, okay? Let's explain that this is called front loading, and why don't you kind of go into the details of what a front-loaded viewing is.
Okay. What happens essentially is they have a geographic map or a actual picture of something. The arrow is the indicator of what the target is specifically supposed to be. And then, of course, you have descriptors that say inside, outside, you know, what's this used for, things like that. And what this essentially does is it arrows down supposedly the target that you're trying to view. So, I mean, that's in essence what's going on with that.
Okay.
So, but with the picture, what it does is it literally locks into the brain what you're wanting to look at instead of just kind of like wavering around a little bit. So.
Okay. And.
Would you like me to upload what I've got?
Well, I just want to make a comment before you do that, though, because I don't know if you remember. When I was confirming with you in terms of what I should be posting.
Mm-hmm.
To make sure I had the front loading correct and the amount of information and also with the queuing. When I got to this particular target, 65658898889, do you remember what you told me before I posted that photo?
Oh, about it being a shoebox?
Yeah.
Yeah, you changed it on me, didn't you?
No, that's a shoebox standing on its side. See, I didn't tell you. When you said that at the time, I didn't want to confirm or deny, but that's actually a shoebox on its side.
Huh.
And you said, oh, and you were laughing, and you said, oh, it's a Nike shoebox. Well, it wasn't a Nike shoebox, but you were seeing a logo on the top of it of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually has these, like, three, I don't know, kind of there's like these three like elongated spheres on it. So there's a stylized graphic on the top of the box. You don't see that because we're looking at the box on its side,
okay.
Or on one end and looking at a side view of it.
Okay, cool.
So I think to be honest, you know, we hadn't talked about it, and for you to just out of the blue say, oh, what's in the shoebox? I thought it was kind of like, well, damn, you know. So
that's curious.
Yeah,
that's what I want to talk about after we get through doing this. Actually, is the different validations I've gotten as far as techniques and what I'm able to do without using this technique. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and upload what I've come up with using what Ed Dames is teaching, which. I don't think this is in the box. And if everybody refresh your page, you can go down to the second entry on that page. This is what I came up with for some reason. I don't know why I keep coming up with plants today.
So why don't you go ahead and
I'm thinking they're wine glasses with an actual flower print or something on the side of it.
And tell me, why don't you talk to us about the your verbal descriptors?
Well, I was coming up with like transparent, green, red, hard, fragile, tall, narrow, and cupped. Now, I wasn't necessarily getting a wine glass as far as the picture, but the descriptors I was getting off the paperwork were pointing towards that. So that's just what I came up with. And for some reason, the number 6, and I don't know why the number 6.
Hmm. Okay, so do you want me to go ahead and post the...
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, that we were talking earlier today about how, for some reason, I can do these spur-of-the-moment readings dead to a T on locations and what's going on, whereas I'm doing this paperwork and it seems to be a lot more vague and random.
But yeah, because obviously the skull is not a wine glass, and it's pretty far off on the descriptors.
Okay.
But like I said, what I think is totally fascinating, though, is before I posted the original photo, you were laughing when you said it. You're like, what's in the shoebox? So it's like at that moment you zoomed in and you pegged it. I mean, you absolutely pegged it. And you even said there was a Nike. You thought it was a Nike because you were seeing a design on the top of the box.
Yeah, and that's just me guesstimating. You know what I'm
yeah.
saying? That wasn't even actually what I was seeing as much as I knew there was a pattern on top of the box.
Right.
So that was my guess.
You know, and to me that was like, dang, too bad this wasn't on the show, because to me I was like floored when you did it, and then I'm trying not to give anything away or anything. And, you know, I don't know. It was just, it was amusing. So, obviously, you absolutely
got that
zeroed
one.
In and called the box.
Oh, yeah.
And you even, like, identified that there was a logo on the lid of the box. So, you know, that's pretty cool. But unfortunately, as far as the target goes, you know, a skull versus a wine set.
You don't have a wine set like that, do you?
No.
Good deal.
Okay,
I just want to make sure I was off for being off. And
oh, you know
not,
what?
Not actually missing target.
Hey, Sharon just asked the question, what was on the paper towel holder? Were there flowers on it? Okay,
oh.
Mike, talk for a second. I will go look.
All
okay?
right. Well, that would be kind of interesting, you know, whether that was going on. I'm not too sure where I was getting the wine glasses from. That's just what was coming out of the remote viewing itself. But, you know, as far as the validation's concerned, there's been several instances, and some of the people in the chat room experienced a couple of weeks ago when they were asking me what was on their desk and everything, where I'm actually just cold reading, just straight, and popping answers off that are pretty much accurate. And using this technique, it just seems... I feel a little bit more confused with it, which I'm wondering whether or not, you know, that has to do with natural ability, and what I'm trying to do is, yes?
Okay. I'm back. Now, see, here's the problem for paranormal investigators doing follow-ups to investigations.
What's that?
Sometimes the environment changes.
Uh-oh.
It appears that my wife has switched brands. So there is a different brand of paper towels out there in the kitchen right now. So I can either confirm
or
blow it up more, but
I don't see it. I don't see any roses on it, man.
But, you know, a lot of times, you know, it's those kind of pastels, and then, you know, they might have been washed out. I don't know. But anyway, that was an interesting.
That was interesting.
Okay, so.
Now, I would like you to tell everybody about the different times of when I've tagged it. And I mean tagged it hard.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about the most recent, and then you can talk about one that you actually did that probably actually kicked you into the direction of taking this course with Major Ed Daines' course on remote viewing. About 6 weeks ago, I lost my cell phone. And I've been, you know, looking all over for it for the last 6 weeks. And I mentioned it for the first time earlier this week to Mike. And he pauses on the phone and he goes, okay, you have a gray flip, a gray Razer flip phone. And I said, well, it's not a Razer, but it is a gray flip phone. And he says, and on the front of it, it's got a window. It's the style with the window on it, which it does. And he says, I'm seeing your phone next to your leg on the right-hand side of either a chair or your car seat. And
And I kept going back to car seat, didn't I?
Yeah, and at first you said chair, and then you went to car seat, and then you remained with car seat. You were very insistent that you're seeing it, it's near the floor, it's to the right of my leg. So we have a number of vehicles. So I went out and I looked at the vehicles and I didn't find anything. And then I went in the house and I basically tipped over our reclining chairs and anywhere that I thought it could possibly have fallen down, couldn't find the phones. I tell Mike, sorry, Mike, looked everywhere, no phone. Well, my daughter came home this weekend and she went to drive in her car and she comes back in the house and she says, hey, are you looking for this? And it was my cell phone. And I said, well, where was it? And she said, oh, it was sitting in a slot next to the driver's seat in the center console. And the way her car is designed, there's a sort of a tray behind the shifter, and it's slightly elevated above the floor, but it's, you know, it's like dark black plastic. And evidently, the cell phone had fallen in there and was leaning on its side, and it was literally about 4 inches from the driver's chair, and if I would be sitting in the car, it would have been literally next to my right leg.
Yep. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, but, you know, that was just insane because it was like, that's obviously a type of remote viewing. It was totally spontaneous because, you know, just out of the blue, I was whining and sniveling about losing my cell phone, and you said, oh, I see it. It's next to your leg, and it's on a chair. No, it's a car seat. And then, you know, I couldn't access all the cars right away, so it went on for, like, what, 2 or 3 days?
Yeah.
And each day you'd ask me, hey, did you find your cell phone yet? And you were being really insistent about it. And I don't know. I'm just, again, pretty amazed.
That's the only way I can describe it. It's just I knew.
The other thing that I think is pretty intriguing about all this, too, is the fact that there's about a million styles and colors of cell phones out there now. And you got the name wrong, but you absolutely 100% described it accurately. It's a gray folding phone with the window on the lid.
Razer style. Yeah.
Yeah, Razer style. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. You were right about what it was, and I'd never told you. It's like, you know, how many people talk about what their cell phone looks like, you know? Not something I think I've ever had a conversation with anybody about. yet you just absolutely pegged it. And I know for a fact that you and I have never talked about my cell phone.
No, that's true. I don't think you have ever said anything. Matter of fact, that's something we just don't. That's irrelevant information. We just wouldn't talk about anyway. That's, you know. But what's interesting about it is when those situations happen to me, it's literally like somebody's playing a real short clip movie in my mind's eye, and it slams in real quick and leaves me with the last picture, and then it's gone as far as it playing. You know, you understand? And so it's just like I'm stuck with that picture in my head at that moment, and then I don't get anything else. And that's it, you know. And here's the first incident that actually led me into wanting to look into remote viewing. I had a buddy has his van, and I don't know if you've ever seen the taillight assemblies on the back of a van. They've got these big red lenses. Well, his, due to, I think, the model, has issues, and the lens assemblies come apart. And you lose part of your red lens off the back of your vehicle when it vibrates too much. Well, he lives 28 miles from my house, and he sat there and had been searching for this thing for over a week, driving back and forth, trying to figure out where the heck this thing was. I sit there, and we were just sitting in the room together talking, and he told me what was going on and how he'd found another lens on the street, but it was the opposite side. It was the right side, not the left side that he needed. And I said, oh, well, you need to go out on there's a particular bridge here. It's Arkansas River Bridge. And I said, it's going to be about dead center of it. Lo and behold, about 10 minutes after he leaves my house, he's out on the Arkansas River Bridge, and it's there. And he can't believe he found it. And I said, well, is it in one piece? And he goes, yeah, it's a little scratched. But, you know, it's what are the chances within 28 miles of me knowing exactly where that lens was, you know? So that found that kind of fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's interesting. And again, it was one of those kind of things where it wasn't like you were planning to do a remote viewing. You know what I mean? It was just absolutely spur of the moment. It's not unlike the night where you were kind of doing some informal viewings with people in the chat room. Like, I believe Sharon was asking you what was on the table next door, and you said, a big stuffed animal, and I guess it turned out it was actually her rather large cat was on the table next door.
Sprawled out, right. And then we had another person asking me what they had on their table, and I told them it was more or less a pink shoe, which that's what it was. And, of course, we had another individual asking me what they were wearing, and you know where that led. But anyway.
Yeah, Mike, it led to a bad place. No.
Anyway,
okay.
But what I'm finding fascinating here is when it's off the cuff and immediate, without me having a chance to think about it, I'm getting the information totally correct. Whereas when I'm using this paperwork like Ed Dame's technique to teach people, I don't seem to be anywhere close to the same accuracy, you know. And even, you know, because we've bumped it up and trying this queuing and front loading evidently doesn't work as good as me just going into a blind. But,
well, you know, that's an interesting thing to think about. What, you know, why is this happening this way? Now, first of all, there's many styles of remote viewing, and there's many methods for achieving or for teaching, I should say, remote viewing. So the fact that evidently just based on who you are and how you organize information or whatever, it seems like when it's a more informal setting, mm-hmm. you are much more accurate than when you sit down and do this as like this like programmed method.
Yeah, this task.
Right. So.
Doug's wanting. What's on? Sharon's asking what's on her desk right now. Is that a flowered pen? Sharon, is that a flowered pen you have on your desk?
Hmm.
I don't know. I'm waiting for her to respond in the chat room. I think there's a delay.
I don't know. Maybe you just stunned her and she's like knocked her right out of her chair. Okay, so
I just chatted her back to flower 10.
All right.
I doubt very seriously. No
flower 10?
10, yep. That's what I'm saying, and this is really weird because it's funny. It's almost like it's a situational thing. There's a bunch of stuff, though. Okay, I'm going to sit there, and I'm going to look again. And how about clutter? Yes.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a lot of clutter.
Yeah. Well, yeah, okay, that could also be deductive reasoning because you know how busy Sharon is.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think she has a flowered pin and she's just not letting me know.
Yeah. Okay, now, the other thing that's going on, Mike, do you think that it's like this is sort of like a version of test anxiety?
The actual response from Sharon was yes, definitely she has a flowered pin. Okay, anyway. You talking about anxiety? I don't know what that is. I noticed, like I said, it's like when something is needed or, you know what I'm saying, a real-life situation, it seems to work better. Does that make sense? You know, whereas if it's something that's just, it doesn't really have any emotional value or weight to it when the person's asking, it doesn't seem to have as much value, I guess, as far as me being able to do it. But like, for instance, you lost your cell phone. You were feeling emotional about it. For some reason, that put weight on it for me. And same thing with my buddy in the lens on his car, because he was upset about that. You know, I've noticed that being a consistency.
All right.
So, I don't know. I don't know if that is exactly what's going on with it, you know, where it's more of a necessity, I need to find this kind of thing deal, you know, because you want to help.
Well, you know, the other thing that could be going on here, too, is the fact that essentially we're creating a test-like environment for you, or we have created an experiment, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And in the very nature of creating an experiment, we have altered your normal environment. There are now different expectations. There's a whole formalized process. So we have changed things up. And that's one of the things that we have to be careful as investigators and researchers is the fact that when we go into places, the fact that we go into a haunted location or some other type of paranormal or some type of paranormal events occurring, the mere fact that we're there has now changed the environment. The fact that we may be with somebody who's had all kinds of interactions with the spirit or whatever, the fact that we're now there and trying to record that could in fact just, you know, change the entire scenario. So, you know, it's something that we have to be aware of as investigators, that when we create experiments and research projects, the mere fact that we're doing that has already altered whatever the normal environment was.
Yeah, and that would make a lot of sense, you know, because you're changing the perimeters and dynamics of what's going on.
Absolutely.
Whereas when we're off the cuff kind of deal and we're not thinking about the experiment, it's not even in that context, it's just like normal everyday life, then all of a sudden it seems to be a lot more fluid and accurate.
Yeah, you know, an analogy that I would use is like, have you ever been in a room where there's a little child and the child just is talking everybody's ear off, and then a stranger, somebody the child doesn't know, comes into the room and the child becomes absolutely silent and doesn't want to talk to anybody? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've been on investigations where clients have reported, it's like, oh, this stuff happens all the time, but now you're here and absolutely nothing's going on. Well, I actually believe that stuff was happening all the time, and I also know that nothing was going on when I was there. And, you know, could it be that, like, you know, this, whatever spirit was there was having the same kind of effect as the child? You know, we're now introducing a stranger to the equation, and, you know, now it's not doing what it normally does. You know, it's just a thought. You know, every time.
Well, I mean, and then that would operate on a subconscious level for somebody like me, whereas I'm not letting it bother me outwardly, but it could be bothering me, you know, internally, where I didn't even recognize it.
Well, yeah, that's true too. I mean, you know, a lot of times, you know, we operate, at, you know, our subconscious is like having an influence over what we're doing, you know, consciously. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, there's just a lot of possibilities. And, you know, right now what I'm seeing is that you clearly have the ability to very accurately remote view. But it appears that when we do it in the style of Major Ed Danes, this doesn't work for you. And, you know, it doesn't mean anything about you personally. It just means it doesn't work for you. It's just like, for instance, and this is something Doug could tell you, certain people you can hypnotize in a certain way, and certain people you can't. So you kind of have a bag of options when it comes to inducing someone into a hypnotic state, because not everything works for everybody. And certain people can be like for instance, I'll give you a good example. Some therapists like to use the sound of water running, like, you know, a stream.
Kind of like a white noise generator?
Yeah. But the problem with that is that certain people have certain phobias centered around water. And when you're inducing them into a hypnotic state, sometimes they react negatively to that sound. They like feel like they've been submerged in water or they're drowning or something. I don't know if Doug's ever had that experience. And other people, you know, they find the sound of the running water very pleasing and relaxing, and they have no problem being, you know, entering into a hypnotic state with that. So again, it's like, it's not like one size fits all. And I think that's entirely true about this remote viewing.
Well, you know, here's something I would like to put forward. I think we need to change it for next week. We're going to be doing the live show, but here's what I would like to do this next go around is you pick two targets early in the week. And then as we're randomly talking, catch me off guard and ask me like you just would, you know, anything. So here's the interesting thing, everybody. When, like, for instance, John was talking about a cell phone, that was cueing me. That was cueing me in on what I was supposed to go look at. Okay? That's what's fascinating in this. Same thing with my buddy and his taillight lens on his car. It's a form of cueing. And it's still the same exact thing that Ed Dames is talking about, how you produce cues. You know, there's a time span being involved. There's an actual object being involved. There's a location, general locations being involved. So, you know, you're still providing cues. Here's the deal with what I'm experiencing. Perhaps if you can catch me off guard in a random situation when we're just talking off the cuff and you just segue into it, maybe it'll trigger it. And we can go about it that direction. And you just don't tell me what, you know, we'll record what I come up with, but you won't let me know if I'm right or wrong until the show.
Okay.
I mean, does that make sense?
All right. Tell me that one more time, because I'm a little slow tonight.
Well, like for instance, if you pick a target, let's say Kremlin Square, okay?
Okay.
You sit there and talk about how you'd like to visit some places over in Russia, blah, 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 and just kind of lead into it, talking about it, and or however. I don't know how you're going to go about doing this. But if you've noticed, like when you were talking about your cell phone, maybe that's what it needs to be. You need to just pick an object and talk about it.
Okay.
And then just kind of go, I don't know where it's at, and that'll cue me up and let me see what happens. I may be good at, you know, identifying locations, and that might be what this is. I don't know. But if you'll randomly catch me during the time span between now and whenever the next show we do the remote viewing, and just cue me up like that and record my response, but don't let me know if I'm right or wrong until the show, then we'll have a way to validate if that's what's really happening with this. So,
okay.
Because that seems to be how this is working for me, and I'm not sure why, but I'm gonna pigeonhole this because I'm just excited. I mean, like today, that was just like total validation with the cell phone. There's no way.
I'm not gonna say you squealed like a little girl on the phone when I told you, but you were rather amused and happy.
Well, my jaw about hit the table because you know it's like you know I've been doing this and then, you know it's kind of like. You see it happening, you're going, you know, I'm not sure. You know, I don't have any way of putting labels on it or anything like that. So now it's getting to the stage where, okay, this is happening to me, and I am able to do this. So now I need to start learning how to control it better, you know, or at least trigger it, I should say. Excuse me. But I think it's going to be fascinating to see where this goes. But I'm still looking at Ed Dame's course and watch the rest of the discs, but I have an odd feeling that technique is flawed for me, and I'm going to have to find a different way of doing it.
Well, let me just talk about that, too. Let's talk about that for a second. Yeah, I would definitely review the rest of the course because, you know what, in that course there may be a little bit of nuggets of information that you're going to be able to integrate into your remote viewing. You know, is it his whole style? No. But there might be a little piece that's real valuable. You know, all these books that I have a whole library of paranormal books here and stuff. And, you know, a lot of them are basically rotten books. On the other hand, I found something of interest and something that has benefited my research and my investigations in every one of them. Even the ones that were basically a rotten book, you know, in the big picture, you know, it wasn't well written. There wasn't, you know, a lot of good information. So, you know, it's kind of like, it's still worth looking in these different areas because there might be something in there that you'll find at a personal level very beneficial. But then again, maybe not.
That's very true.
But since you have the course, and, you know, I got, you know, you were sharing part of it with me, you know.
I mean,
it's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, but did it not seem a little confusing on that second disc, talking about?
I don't have the benefit of having seen the first, 4 hours of it or whatever. So I'm coming in at midpoint. But even not knowing exactly what's going on, which is frequently where I am in life anyway, not knowing what's going on. I still found it fascinating and very interesting, you know. He's obviously, well, first of all, he's a dynamic speaker and trainer, and he's obviously put a lot of thought behind what he's doing. I just found it very interesting. Okay, Mike, let's talk about something a little different. Let's plug our next show because that's going to be in itself a little bit different. I'm going to go ahead and post a link where people can get more information about it. Next Sunday night, I'm going to be at the Haunted Cottage in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia. And I'm going to be speaking with author and paranormal investigator Vince Wilson. He'll be giving me a tour of his paranormal museum and research facility there. Evidently, he's purchased a haunted location in Harpers Ferry, which in itself is a fairly active, just generally speaking, like all over the town, active location. Incredible place. If you're a history buff, you'll love it. Obviously, if you're into the paranormal, you'll totally be fascinated about the stuff that's going on in that town. If anyone does go up there, don't bother asking the park rangers about paranormal stuff because they're basically been told not to talk about it. But if you go into the various shops and restaurants and stuff like that, the locals and stuff, they love to talk about it. And there's just a lot of really interesting stuff going on there. Anyway, so we'll be doing a live on-site show there, and he'll be walking me through the museum, and we'll be talking about various aspects of the of paranormal research as it relates primarily to equipment. Vince Wilson is kind of like one of the ultimate tech guys in the ghost hunting community. So I read his first book, I think it was back in about 2005 it must have came out. It's called Ghost Tech. In fact, I loaned it out to somebody and I never got it back. So if that person's listening tonight and you have my Ghost Tech book, please give it back to me. So anyway, I think it'll be an interesting night. I spoke with him on the phone this week, and he seems like a real fascinating guy. I think it's going to make for a very entertaining show.
I think it will be too. And I'll be stuck back in the studio listening to you with everybody else. And, of course, we're going to provide links to, I guess, the museum and everything, too, so everybody can look at some of the pictures inside the museum. And that's what's going to be kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that would be a pretty good show. How long has he been doing this stuff, did he say?
Well, I don't know. His first book came out in 2005, and I think that he's published, I want to say, four other books. One's on, I don't remember the title right now, but it's on basically haunted locations in Baltimore. He runs a team out of Baltimore, an investigative team. And then there's two other books that he's done. One's, I believe, is like an investigative guide, and the other one's another tech book.
Okay, cool.
But he's very knowledgeable. And back in 2005 when I got his book, at that point of time, I thought he did a really good job of basically showing all the historical equipment that's been used to date, all the current stuff, and I don't know. I thought he did a good job with it. So
well, that's cool. Very good. Very good. Huh. I guess we'll just go ahead and schedule the remote viewing for 2 weeks out from now. And we'll sit there and contemplate how to go about this the proper way. So
like, if we're on this haunted location and we actually see, like, an apparition or something during the tour, is that going to just break your heart?
Absolutely. Hey, you know something? I could probably remote view while you're there. That would be kind of fun.
Hey, we could do the old standby, Mike. How many fingers am I holding up on my hand?
We don't flash IQs across the phone like that.
Oh, okay. Now, okay.
Yeah. That was three. Anyway.
Oh. Okay. Boy, you know, you've been with the zingers. I got to just share this with the folks out there. Last night, we're working on websites, Paranexus's website, and also my Shenandoah Shadows website. It's about midnight. And Mike gets a brilliant idea of, like, hey, you know, I've never seen what you look like. Let's video conference. So I was like, well, okay. So now get this. Mike's never seen me, right? We turn on the video conference, and the first thing out of his mouth is he goes, dude, you really look rough.
Well,
and then he goes,
I feel like I already knew you enough that I could say something like that.
You see, he's not denying it. He's just a total trash bag, you know. First he got up his mouth, he insults me. And then he goes, wow, how old is that photo that you have on Paranexus? Like, dude, it's 2 years old, you know. So anyway.
Well, you know, it's funny how much a person changes when you let your hair grow out and things like that.
Well, actually, my hair was long then, and now it's short now, and so...
Well, like I said, it just changes your features, so...
Yeah. And you're not going to get out of it that easy. Okay.
I still love you, John.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Now, let's talk about Zenner cards.
Oh,
and let's talk
Carl
about,
Zenner. Okay.
Let's talk about our future Paranexus research project that...
I'm excited about that. That's kind of cool.
That members and the public can participate in. For those of you that don't, you've heard of Zenner cards, but all of a sudden your mind's blanking out. Those are the cards, the formal name of the cards that you normally are associated with ESP experiments. It's five cards, and they each have a symbol like wavy lines or a cross or a star.
Circle and a square.
a circle and a square. Yep. Okay? So these cards were invented by a Carl Zenner, and he was on the faculty of Duke University's psychology department in like the 1920s and 30s. And where they became famous was J.B. Ryan, who was also one of the faculty members on the psychology department at Duke. He did all those experiments in ESP during the 1930s. And so he's the one that actually made these cards famous.
Didn't he have problems with the first set he had?
There was a number of problems with J.B. Ryan's whole study, if you will. And you're right. The first cards had this issue. They were printed on stock that was thin, and basically in certain lighting conditions, the symbols were bleeding through. And so people could actually see what the symbols were, and oh, guess what? They got really good results on predicting what was behind the card. The other thing that can happen is that even if the person, even if it doesn't bleed through to the point where the person is, their cognitive consciousness is aware of it, there might be enough of a bleed through that your subconscious can see the symbol. So they ended up having to redesign the card, made them thicker, and actually printed a picture of Duke University, some location in Duke University, on it, so you couldn't, you know, get that kind of bleed through effect. But someone figured out how to cheat with those cards as well. It turns out that those cards, because it was a picture of a building, it had a certain orientation, right? So what someone could do is essentially stack the deck. And it would require that the person who's supposed to be independent and verifying that no cheating's going on was in fact helping to, you know, cheat. And what they would do is they would turn certain cards, they'd load the deck. So, you know, a certain percentage of the cards would be facing one way, but maybe all the X's and O's were facing another way. So every time the card was presented, if they saw like an upside down building, they now knew that that either had to be an X or an O.
Oh, wow.
Which totally changes the odds. Okay? Because basically the odds are you have these five symbols, there's 20 cards in the deck.
25
in a deck.
Yeah.
And if you go, basically if you get one out of five correct, that's basically just random chance. Anything more than that is beyond chance. And it speaks to a level of extrasensory perception. And, of course, the further you get out there, you know, speaks to your level of ability. The other problem is he did a number of studies that ended up no one else could replicate his results. And that's always a huge red flag. And then years later, it turns out that there was some talk about some of his research assistants having fudged the data. So we don't really know what the actual good data is because there's just a number of issues with it. One being the design was such that in the early studies, there was contamination. And then there was cheating. And then there was, in other ones, there was one they could shuffle the deck in a way that essentially allowed card counting to occur. And they would do that in the early studies. They were allowing people to see the results immediately. And so, you know, a lot of people could know exactly what the next cards were going to come up or what the statistical.
Yeah. The closer you get to the bottom of the deck, the queen, the more you can calculate what's coming up.
Right. If you're getting, you know, if you know that there's four cards left and you haven't seen, you know, two X's, an O, and a star, you know, you got a pretty good, a much better chance of guessing what it's going to be. So anyway, it's a, that's what the Zenner cards are. That's what the ESP study is. And so what we're trying to do, as in Mike, is actually designing a computer program that's going to allow people to log on at Paranexus and participate in this study.
Actually, they don't even have to log on. This is just going to be an open page.
They're going to have to go to the Paranexus site, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, through Paranexus to get to it. And what the deal is, it's just going to record you, the user, coming in the database and your session, and whether you're male or female, and your age, and you're literally going to just take the test, and what's going to end up happening is after the test is complete, then it's going to come back and give you your results. And if you score anything above 20%, you're doing well. So that means let's just let everybody know right up front. That's just the standard. Go ahead.
I was going to say the other thing is it's going to actually be able to differentiate two different types of extrasensory perception.
That's correct. And the way this works is, like, for here's a good for instance, John. I've got a deck of cards, right? I have not drawn a card off the top of the deck, you know, after they've been shuffled. And I ask you, what's the next card? And what this would be like precognition, right?
Right.
Where you're trying to predict what's fixing to happen in the future. Well, I can reproduce that in a computer program easily. The random card being selected will not happen until after you make your choice. So what we'll be doing is be testing precognition. The other one would be the card's already been selected, and now it's asking you, which card is it? Which is clairvoyant type action going on? So you know you have one that's it's already happened, it's in the past, and then you have one that's a future prediction kind of deal.
Right.
So,
and basically, both things will be being measured in our version of this test.
And you won't know which one you're doing ever. And that's the thing. I'm going to make sure that whoever comes in, it's going to randomly flip which test you're doing. And that way, when we start having the data showing up in the database, and it's going to take a few months, if not a year, to run this, to actually get a good data set to see what's going on the population. But, you know, that's what we're trying to do is test as many people in the population as possible to actually see what the actual bell curve shows. Is a higher percentage of the population actually showing psychic ability? Or, you know, is everybody just pretty much normal? Is there just a small span of people by age group showing psychic ability? Or is it a gender thing? You see, you know, so we can actually, we'll be able to bottleneck what are, you know, precursors to having psychic ability. You know, what to look, right. You know, who to look for. And
the other thing is that individuals that come on will be able to going to have to do it manually, like, so they'll have to keep their own journal, if you will. But they can, like, track their results over a period of time. You know, they can just write them down in this journal, their own journal, and see if their psychic skills, you know, are enhanced over time when they engage in these types of testing.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is, you know, the more you practice, the better you get at anything. So I'm guesstimating that is, we're going to see that, too. And I'll be able to tell that. I actually can tell when the same person is on the website and actually doing their thing. So we actually watch that transition, too, by the date. So that's going to be some pretty interesting data to see if their actual abilities increase over time. So, you know, that ought to be a pretty interesting test. I think that this will be clean enough research to where we, you know, considering the computer is going to be the actual monitor instead of it being a person doing it, we'll have a consistent method when we won't have any skewed data because somebody decided to hold the cards different one day.
Right.
So.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about what's going to be on Paranexus Universe Thursday night, September 9th.
What is it going to be on?
Well, first of all, it's a special 1.5-hour Paranexus show.
Oh, yeah?
And it's called The Gray's Agenda with Nigel Kerner, and he's the author of Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls.
Oh, that sounds kind of wild.
And with him is a Dr. Andrew Silverman and John Biggerstaff, who's a research associate professor of cell biology at Tennessee University.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
So we've got a longer than usual show, and definitely sounds like a provocative topic.
Oh, yeah.
So
I'm kind of, that'd be a good show for me to watch and listen to. I'll have to show, make sure I'm in the chat room that night, see what Doug and Grant come up with, and see what these guys have to say, and that'll be fun, actually. I'm kind of excited, though, about this remote viewing thing going on, because what it's doing for me is I'm seeing it from a scientific standpoint as there's a lot of things people take for granted. And everybody has some form of intuition. Some people call it spidey sense, gut feelings. You know, some people get migraines, headaches when something's fixing to happen. I mean, everybody's physiological response is totally different. And like for me, the pictures that slam in my head, it's almost a numbing effect when it happens to me. I don't even feel my body while it's happening. It's a quick hit.
Okay, so you feel something at a physical level as well as a cognitive level.
Right, I don't feel a damn thing in my body. I mean, I'm serious. It's just like I'm a little kid again. I don't feel, you know what I'm saying? You know, you get older, you kind of, you're sore all the damn time. But, yeah, I guess what it is my attention is there. All of my focus is there for a moment. And it's like I don't even have a choice when it happens. It just does. And I think it has, you know, that's the same as a lot of people's other, you know, their other skills and intuitions and stuff. I think that's along the same lines as how theirs perhaps operate. And I wish to goodness I could figure out the trigger mechanism to this, which I think over time me and you'll figure it out.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. You know, the other thing, too, is, you know, I was talking to you about this, is the fact that, you know, you're very logical in your thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And you engage in deductive reasoning. And so a lot of times, you know, like when you're doing things in a remote viewing, you know, I ask myself, now, is he remote viewing or is he engaging in deductive reasoning? Because sometimes this guy's like, you know, Sherlock Holmes when it comes to like putting together all these little minute pieces of information and coming up with the big picture. And I'm just wondering sometimes, you know, is that what's going on? But when you said that you have a physical reaction that occurs when you remote view.
Yeah, it is. It's totally different. Where, you know, and you noticed how I was, when I was telling you what was going on, it was just like I was dumping information out on a table.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't, you know, I think or this or that. It's bam, bam. I'm just literally making statements one after the other when it's happening. And what I'm seeing.
And the other thing I'd like to point out is that when you're doing that kind of a reading, afterwards, you don't always remember everything that you just said.
No, I don't. That's what's even weirder.
Yeah. But, you know, a lot of psychics, that happens with a lot of psychics as well.
Really?
You know what? We're getting down to our last less than 2 minutes in the show. So I just want to remind people to join us on September 12th at the We're going to be at the Haunted Cottage with Vince Wilson, and it'll be a live, on-site evening there.
Yeah, I think that'll be great. That's going to be a lot of fun for everybody. You know, I'm kind of curious. So he's actually has a historical museum of all the paranormal equipment that's been used over the years.
Well, he has a lot of it anyway.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So, it'll be interesting to see. See what his research facility's like and just, you know, everything that he's doing there. Well, Mike, thank you for a great evening.
Oh, I had fun.
Yeah, me too. And I want to thank everyone that was listening and participating in the chat room. I appreciate that. So,
well, I guess it's going to be next week. We'll see everybody. Make sure you listen to ParaNexus Universe on Thursday night at 9 o'clock, and we will be back at 10 o'clock Sunday night with a interesting show for sure. So,
all right. Let's cue the music and call it a night.
All right. Everybody have a good weekend or week, and I will talk to you next week. Bye.